Blog Talk Radio.
United States Armed Forces, the Men and Women of Police and Fire Services by Dr. Kathleen Carroll, a board-certified psychiatrist in private practice since 2003. Dr. Carroll previously was the Director of Inpatient Services at the Bay Pines VA Hospital and Medical Center. Dr. Carroll specializes in the treatment of children ages 6 and older and the treatment of adults, in other words, from the womb to the tomb. She's also an all-time triathlete. So if you're having any problems breaking through with any level of sports, or if you're having problems with anything in life, give her office a call and make an appointment at area code 813-689-2466. And her office is located at 336 East Bloomingdale Avenue in Brandon, Florida. Well, guys, it's good to have everybody back. Dr. Chris will be joining us in a few minutes. I'm glad you got back from your trip and nice, safe, and sound. Ty, it's always good to have you back on.
Thank you, sir. Yeah. Thank you very much. I apologize for my absence last week.
Yeah, no. Family comes first, brother. And with that in mind, Brady, you have something to say?
Yeah, I just want to do a special thanks to all the mothers, especially my grandma and my mom.
Great man.
Absolutely.
But Brady, you want to start us off? You have anything on football today?
I got one more thing. Just a special thanks to all the mothers. But, yes, I got a lot of stuff on the Eagles.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't really have that much, but, yeah. The Eagles, they got Alex McAllister. He has a lot of sacks. He replaced Trent Cole's old spot. Like,
mm-hmm.
But Trent Cole, he didn't have that many sacks. But
right.
Alex McAllister, he has a lot of sacks. Like, I was watching some highlights, and he, you could just see, he tore right through the line, and he got right to the quarterback. He's like a, I'm pretty sure he's a linebacker, but he's like, he acts like he's a cornerback. He's as fast as a cornerback.
Oh, wow.
And he can just get in there. But it's also, it's a hard transition from the college to NFL, so that
right.
may be a
yeah.
hard thing for him. Also, Caleb Jones is great at catching in traffic. He can do, like, diving catches, you know, in the end zone in the corners when they just the quarterback's trying to loft it up there. You know, he can do that. And I also realized that Pittsburgh, they're not making a lot of transactions. They're only re-signing people and, like, they didn't do that good last year. So, I don't know if they,
think they got something
up
their sleeve?
What? I don't know,
they
actually,
got up their
you know.
Sleeve.
They
well,
might,
you know
yeah, because they might be saving up.
Last year.
You
know, I'm a huge Steelers fan. The offense was strong last year, so they really need to upgrade on the defensive end. Would you agree, Brady?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, also, they might have something up their sleeve to get, like, a huge, maybe a couple of players out of, they're probably saving up money. They might
right.
be saving up money so they can get, like, really good people, you know, the guys that you want, you know.
Right.
Will Fuller out of Notre Dame, he was picked up
right.
by Houston, first round, 21st pick. I think Houston, they're probably going to be pretty good this year with Brock Osweiler and Will Fuller working together. They signed a bunch of free agents. They had some good draft picks. You know, they're probably going to be with Jacksonville in one of the top, like Jacksonville, like I said last week, Jacksonville had an amazing free agency. And so if Houston only picked up, like, what, 13 free agents, but if they build that up, because there's still a lot of time in the offseason, more teams will probably build up. Oh, I forgot to talk about the Cowboys. The Cowboys line, I'll finish with what I was saying, but, yeah, I think they're going to go to the playoffs. Jacksonville, I guarantee they're going to go to the playoffs because they're really stacking up on their free agency. They're stacking up on the draft. You know, Cowboys, also, they need to provide more time for their QBs because I was watching a thing where it said it was switching out the Cowboys quarterbacks. And
right.
they will be back there for a second, someone like Matt Cassel, and he'd be hesitating for, like, maybe 2 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
And then, bam, they come in. I think Cowboys are more of a run. They're more of a run block, not a
right.
pass block that much. They need to get, like, they need one more lineman to fill, you know, so they could be like the steel curtain of offense, you know? Like, they could be the steel curtain of offense, of the offensive line.
There
so,
you go.
Yeah.
I think
and,
you got somebody there ready to, that's agreeing with you.
You know, but, Cowboys need more time to being provide. But I think they're more used to Tony Romo, where he moves around a lot. And
yeah.
Tony Romo, he's had a ton of injuries, and he may have another one. If he has
yeah.
maybe three more, they're going to give up
right.
on him, like, just like they did Sam Bradford. Remember, because Sam Bradford, they kept him for a couple of years, and then they just let him go because they knew he
right.
would probably get in. Because, you know, the defense, when they got Sam Bradford, the defense knew that they would have to deal. So, like, maybe when the first time he got injured, before that they knew he was going to be, like, great. He was going to be a really good quarterback. But then they injured him, and so that. And then he was, like, a little good, and then he got injured again. And then injured a third time, they knew he couldn't, you know, play
yeah.
that much. You know, he's like, I don't know why, but I'm saying a lot of like last time I said like Bo Jackson or Prince was Bo Jackson. Like now I'm gonna say he's like the Derrick Rose,
yeah.
of football kind of, you know, because Derrick Rose blew out his knee or something.
Good.
But
that's a great.
Yeah,
that
I think that's
report.
Yeah, that's it.
Okay, all right. Well, we're gonna start talking. Fights real soon. We're going to talk to Dr. Smith in a minute and have him come on. Then we're going to have Danny Batchelder come on. For those of our fans out there, Danny was a heavyweight contender who is now also doing the national bare knuckle champion in the heavyweight division. Danny's got a fight in Fort Lauderdale in June 11th. So he'll be on to tell us all about that and tell us about where we get tickets if for anybody we want to go. Ty, tell us about your week.
Oh, it's been pretty good. I've been doing a lot of audio work for the movie, and we sent it to a sound house to be upgraded. And
nice.
We have a big showing in San Francisco June 18th. So we'll be flying out to San Francisco for the weekend and doing a Frame Live Film Festival, a California premiere.
Great.
Wait, what's the movie called? Movie?
Film
Wait,
Hawk.
You said, what?
Film Hawk.
Film
Hawk?
Yes,
oh, okay.
It's a documentary.
Okay. Z, it's good to have you back. What do you think
good
about last
back.
Week's fights? Did you have a chance to look at any of them?
Yes, I did. I actually did. And there were some entertaining fights. They were absolutely entertaining fights. Some surprising and some entertaining. I had a problem with a few of the decisions that were made. I didn't have a problem with when the fist decided to fight.
Right.
The Dimension Victor Ortiz. Wow.
Right.
Oh, wow.
So, okay, go ahead, break down the Ortiz Berto fight for us if you want.
They both sort of began, I mean, I guess, I don't want to say it's cautious. Victor Ortiz began a little more cautious, but he seemed to kind of get his bearings. These two guys have seen each other before. So it's been a minute, but they really haven't changed that much. Well, one has. One thing is, Berto, he got hit flush. He got knocked down. He was squaring up. His feet didn't move. The rest of his body did. He got knocked down clean. But one thing is, Berto's tough. Berto's tough. And Berto, he's been through storms. I mean, as far as weathering him, he's always, if he's in the storm, he's going to be through the eye of the storm fighting. And the storm has to be strong to really do anything to Berto.
Right.
Or stronger, just technically, you know, strong as in boxing terms, as far as skill,
right.
fundamentals, you know, or just being special.
Right.
Victor Ortiz, he knocks everybody down that he generally fights. I mean, he has a very high percentage of knocking everybody down. It's always when you get back up on him. It's always when you get back up. Berto hit him with a very good uppercut in kind of in the mix, and Victor Ortiz was bending into it. His shell is not sturdy anyway, so getting hit with that kind of was it. I mean, he got back up, but, I mean, Berto, I mean, after that, Victor Ortiz was pretty much done. He got knocked down again, and that was basically it. Some guys, I mean, no matter how much skill and talent you have, power, speed, even technique to a certain extent. If you're not tough, or if you can't just totally avoid having to be tough, then Klitschko-esque, then you're it's going to be hard to be successful to a certain degree. You can go ahead and wipe out certain competition with that. You can go ahead, you know, lesser known, maybe lesser skilled fighters, lesser quality. I hate to put it in those terms, but lesser quality fighters, you can get like that. But when it comes to a guy who maybe is tough enough, Jose Zito Lopez is tough enough, then you see these guys and they don't wilt away. And all of a sudden, they're kind of back on you. They're touching back on you. Mm-hmm. I mean, boxing is psychological. It's absolutely psychological. And then when you get your frame bent and your frame's not the same anymore, you can't take it like that anymore, and your will is kind of crazy, well, then, I mean, Victor Ortiz got up. The ref asked him, you know, I think the ref said, if you want to continue, you know, say something to me. And Victor Ortiz kind of, you know, shyly looked around. That's what it looked like to me. I don't want to call anybody's character into question, but I don't think it would have been wise for him to continue, period. But I think he knew that. And unfortunately, we've been here several times with him before. So,
and you know, I think the sad thing too is when you look at the two fighters, Victor Ortiz has always been the more naturally gifted, fundamentally sound of the two fighters. And even having been out the ring as long as he has, and Berto having been active, you still could see that Victor Ortiz looked like the more comfortable, fluent boxer in the ring. And he's always going to be a little, you know, he's still a little quicker than Berto with his hands because he's more direct with his punches. Berto fights in bursts, and Berto doesn't appear at this point, and to me the last three or four fights that I've seen him, he doesn't appear to have the legs that he used to have. His legs are, you know, I would never say he's a shot fighter because, he's not, certainly by any means, but he doesn't have the legs that he had before. He doesn't bend at the knees quite like he used to. His legs are very stiff. It seems like his feet are a little heavy. With all that said, in spite of Victor Ortiz being, you know, the more fundamentally sound fighter and the more gifted fighter as well, Victor Ortiz, when he was at his best, his skill and his style was predicated upon imposing his will on others. And for someone to essentially rely on imposing their will on others, yet have their own will broken so easily, is somebody who probably can't succeed at the highest level anymore. Because once you start fighting at a higher level, it's harder to break guys' wills. Guys will fight through adversity. And once you start fighting through adversity, once Victor Ortiz sees that he can't break your will or feels that he can't break your will, even though he has the boxing skills to fall back upon, once you start to dent a chin that's already dentable, then he realizes, you know what, this is not necessarily what I want to do. I don't want to fight through this anymore. So it's just, it is what it is. But, you know, a lot of people call him quitter. I call him realistic about who he is as a person. And, you know, as a person, he can only achieve a certain level as a fighter.
And Chris, Dr. Chris is joining us. Chris, what do you think?
Oh, God.
We're talking about the Berto and Ortiz fight.
Yeah, it wasn't much. like he was saying, it seems like his heart's gone. He doesn't want to fight anymore. I don't think it's in him anymore. When you were saying about imposing your will, the stronger, better conditioned fighter, you know, always tries to do that. That's all he's got. And Berto's a short guy, you know, and he was in good shape. He looked like he was in good shape and walked right through the poor guy. But I saw a featherweight about 3 weeks ago, left-hander. Did you guys see him? Gary
Russell Jr.
Yeah, man, is he a good fighter.
He's fast.
He is tremendous, isn't he? He's only
fast.
About 5'3", about the same size as the Prince. Remember the Prince? And man, he had a right hook. He took that Irishman's head off with that right hook. That kid was good. I really like that.
And you know Lomachenko's already beaten Gary Russell.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. Beat him. I mean, beat him nice and thin. They call it a majority decision, but he beat him pretty clean.
Yeah, it'd be hard pressed. He's a bigger, taller, better. He's a better boxer than this kid was.
Yeah, you'd be hard pressed to give Gary Russell four rounds in that fight.
Like, literally, I thought that if Lomachenko would have stepped on the gas pedal a little more and forced his will a little more, he would have stopped Gary Russell.
So, I never thought that just shows you how good Lomachenko is. He's really good when he's on his game.
That Gary, man, he was a tremendous fighter. I liked him. I didn't know he lost to that other. I didn't hear the prelim. You know, I turned it in about the first round. And guy's 5'3", the other guy's 5'7". I thought, wow, we liable to have something here. Man, he come inside him, hit him with that right hook. Boom.
Fast.
He's a tough little guy.
He's got a fighter spirit too. He's got a warrior spirit, and he's got he's got some of the quickest hands in the game too.
Hey,
he's lightning fast with his hands. I got a big charge out of him. I didn't the Ortiz fight kind of what I expected. I wasn't too thrilled with that, but I like that Gary Russell fight. Yeah, that was terrific. What do you guys think tonight? I heard you talking about Canelo. Here's my concern. Amir Khan moved up two weight divisions in a short period of time. I'm wondering if he's going to come in that ring with all muscle, or there's going to be a little bit of fat in there. And I don't think he's going to. I think he's going to wind up spotting Canelo 8 to 10 pounds in this fight.
You know what? Canelo. I think you could even spot him more. But here's the thing, though, right, Dr. Chris? Even though Amir Khan has moved up two weight divisions, he's only really moving up 8 pounds now, because the catch weight's 155. They both weighed in at 155. So physically, he's only moving up from 147 to 155. He's a big guy. Virgil Hunter said he always had, it was a struggle for him to make. He was struggling making weight, and he always had a hard time making 147, he said. And he said 154 could be even a more natural division for him. Canelo, though, rehydrates so much bigger. Khan is probably, they said, going to be about 160 in the ring. We know Canelo gets close to 180, if not upwards of 180 in the ring.
He gets beefed up. I know that. He looks awful bulky when he comes in. He got to be up there. So it's going to.
I know
he's light
heavyweight's 175. He's usually, right around probably like 176 when he allows himself to be weighed or so. So so you were saying? I'm sorry.
That's all right. I know. I just said that. I'm wondering if Khan, as fast as he is, fast as his hands are, he's taller, faster. No question, he's a better boxer, but he's also given up a lot of weight and strength.
I don't know if Khan is necessarily a better boxer than Canelo. He's a better range boxer.
I'd say outside fighter.
Yeah.
He's an outside fighter.
I think this fight's going to really kind of come down to Amir Khan's discipline. If he throws that extra punch in the combination or not. I mean, things like that are going to matter, really matter. Should he throw more than one punch or not? Things like that are really kind of going to matter here. I mean, he has a very small margin of error with kind of a greater level of what he can do.
Yeah, this is a guy who can time you. A guy can run into a punch, and this is a guy who can time you and allow. He can. Canelo can allow Khan to do the work for him to a certain extent. But one thing I want to just tell you guys right quick, I saw looking at the weigh-in photos. It's funny you said that, Dr. Chris, because I was wondering if he was going to come in more muscular. He didn't. It didn't look like he had, was more muscular.
He didn't
pack
any muscle on, huh?
Nah, you know what it looked like? It looked like he just cut less weight. You know what I mean? Like, obviously, he has to cut down to 147. Just look like he cut less weight. Be interesting to see what kind of shape he's in, how it affects his speed and power. But he definitely just looked like he just didn't diet as much or just cut less weight. Yeah.
Did he come in at 155? What did he come in? What weight did he come in at?
They both came in at 155. Yep, right on the nose.
Come in at full, right on the nose. Well, we'll see.
Yeah.
And he just looked. He didn't look more muscular. He just looked bigger than he normally looked. That's all.
Yeah, bulkier. Yeah, a little bulkier.
Yep.
I didn't know. He didn't really have enough time to pack on a lot of muscle.
Yeah.
He didn't have enough time. It took Holyfield, Christ, a year and a half to do that. You know.
Yeah.
To pack it on and Vinny Pazienza, he was fighting at 139. Next thing I know, he's at 175 and got his head knocked off. He thought Packer Muscle was going to make him a light heavy.
Yeah.
And, you know, he just packed on bulk, and he didn't pack on any speed or power. This was a little bulkier. He got slower, and he got the living hell beat out of him by the commentator, you know?
Roy Jones, yep.
Roy. Roy gave him a whip.
Like you were saying about Canelo and Khan, if Khan stays in there too long, he's probably gonna get hit real bad. Cause Alvarez, he's better at uppercuts than other punches, so he might. Yeah, Khan might get in trouble when.
Yeah, he doesn't belong inside fighting. Canelo inside. He's going to have to, and if he don't throw the left hook behind the right hand, he's going to be in real big trouble. Like you said, if he just throws a jab in the right hand, he's done. You got to throw that left hook.
And he probably shouldn't try any body shots, because if he does any body shots, he's done. Because
Khan whips an amazing left hook to the liver now in combination. Yeah. And I think he's smart enough with Virgil Hunter to be able to set up, you know, shots here and there to be able to do that. What's going to be, you know, so paramount for him is that when he does get his combination off, that he spins out, not pull straight back with his head up, you know, tactics that he does, not staying in the pocket too long, throwing fuselage, but throwing smart combinations and stepping around and making Canelo readjust. That's his only game chance, knowing when to clinch, knowing when to change range and distance.
His escape is going to be important. I mean, not only his attack, his escape is going to be detrimental. Just because
you
Canelo
know what the thing is, he can attack.
Back.
He can attack from a range Canelo can attack from. But once he attacks from that range, Canelo will step in and time you. So it's so important that like you said, his entries have to be careful, because if he starts to get a little rudimentary or predictable, which he can, not as much under Virgil, then Canelo will kind of step right into a shot and have Amir in trouble. Although I don't think, you know, Canelo's not as big a puncher as everybody thinks he is. Part of what proves that to me is Cotto's chin is very dentable. And he wasn't able to dent Cotto. Khan is bigger, younger, and fresher than Cotto. He doesn't have as good a chin as Cotto, but, you know, just a point. But the fact of the matter is that Khan, you know, if he allows himself to become rudimentary and is easily timed, then Canelo will do that. As long as he's changing up what he's doing, boxing at range, being careful of his entries and his escapes, like Zito said, making sure he's stepping around, not moving out on straight lines, he has a chance. But I think, you know, logic has to say that Canelo eventually gets to him. So
I think Canelo, his power is respectable. It's not, I don't think it's one punch KO type, but it's respectable enough to knock Kirkland out and to stop Angulo. I mean, granted, these guys come at you, but still, they were known for tough, rugged chin.
Gino, which further exemplifies my point about Amir Khan and his in-game, when you were saying about his entry, because when he enters, that's when he tends to be able to step into a punch every now and then, especially the overhand right. And if Canelo catches him with that, Canelo will drop him with that punch if Khan is coming into it.
I was thinking more the uppercut. Because Khan, he comes in a bit high, and if he comes straight high, Canelo's very angular. So he'll slip to the side and shoot that uppercut right where those arms, you know, are not. So, I mean, Cotto, he's a little slicker than Khan as far as defense. So he wasn't getting caught as sharp as Khan. Like Khan,
better counterpuncher too.
Exactly. And to the point to where Cotto, he at times could escape on the inside without getting hit, you know, too much. You know, he'd roll his shoulders.
Well,
I think Khan really
on the inside. Yeah.
Exactly. And I think even during his escapes, Khan has to roll his shoulders quite a bit.
Now, Khan has become a much better clinch fighter.
Yes,
of that's
it. Exactly.
He's a much better clinch fighter.
And in those moments, he's going to have to roll his shoulders, get some shots off, you know, not how people commit to the break and then they mutually, you know, let each other go. And then, no, he has to, when you're letting go, hit two.
That's what he's been doing, too, man. Virgil has him doing.
He has to employ a lot of things in this fight.
Hey,
what you capable of doing?
Can I get muted for a second? I got to go do something.
Okay.
You know what surprises me? Canelo never gets beat up around the eyes. He's a short fighter. You know, these guys are taller than him, faster than him. They ought to, you know, they don't. Doesn't seem like he's ever had been cut around the eyes. Did he ever get cut?
You know, it's funny. That's a good point. I mean, he fought Arizona Lawrence. He fought a lot of straight lefts, but I don't remember him swelling up or cutting. And you know what? I think because his first of all, his defense is improved by leaps and bounds. But he may just have the type of skin, you know, with him that. Again, think about this though. Mexicans generally, typically, throughout history, don't swell up or cut a lot too. So even though his skin looks more fine than that.
There's one thing Canelo does that I absolutely love, and especially with jabs and rights to the face straight, he'll turn his head. He'll literally, when the punch is like almost to his cheek, he'll just turn his head with it.
We were just talking about how Michael Nunn used to do that. Yeah.
Exactly. I mean, and just simple subtle movements like that. I saw him get hit flush. But not repeatedly, not by anybody. I mean, Floyd hit him flush enough to settle him down. But, I mean, you know, Floyd's not a repeated hitter.
He doesn't catch a lot of combinations, though.
Yeah.
Because he's too astute a counterpuncher, too.
Yeah.
Hey, guys, what do you think about, I see they added Yui Fury to the Tyson Fury undercard. I guess, Chris, you'll be able to see both of them at the same time and see who sings the worst.
Who are they putting on the undercard, Frank?
His
brother?
Tyson Fury's brother, Yui.
Yui's his cousin. Yui is another big guy. He doesn't have a lot of power. He just outboxed Fred Kassie pretty clean. And a lot of people thought it was a boring fight, but the fact of the matter is Fred Kassie should have had a victory over Areola, should have had a victory over Dominic Brazil. Amir Mansour knocked his head off. But he's been pretty competitive with fringe contenders, and Yui beat him pretty cleanly. He kind of, you know, sleepwalked his way through the fight, but he beat him pretty cleanly. So, you know, he's developing pretty good boxing skills. I think his ceiling is lower than Tyson's. And even on that undercard, I don't think he won't be televised because he's not at that level yet, I believe. So.
That's July 9th over in Manchester.
I'll be anxious to see him. I'd like to see him. I'll tell you what, the most impressive guy, even more impressive than that big left-handed Cuban, is this English heavyweight.
Anthony Joshua.
Yeah, he's a hell of a fighter. I think he's for real. He stays in there. He plants his body, and when he lets it go, he's got power behind it.
It's definite that he's growing. I have to see his level of competition move up. But
He just signed a long-term deal with Showtime, so you're going to be able to see that.
Right now, I consider the IBF belt that Anthony Joshua is holding, and this is no disrespect to any of the fighters, but I consider it the JB heavyweight belt, primarily because it was, you know, obviously Charles Martin had it, and he was very green and experienced. Joshua has it, and Joshua's really developing. He's definitely the blue-chip prospect, but he's still really a prospect. And he's still green and experienced. And he's about to fight Dominic Brazil, who's very green, and he's green like Ganja, who's very green and experienced. So, you know, the fact of the matter is that, you know, what's happening is this is the belt that's being defended and fought right now by very inexperienced heavyweights. These guys are contenders because of the sanctioning by the organization. A lot of people didn't think that Joshua deserves such a high ranking by the IBF. I think he proves it because, right now he passes the eye test. But right now all these guys are still really green. And they're still really, like, part of the lure of Joshua signing with Showtime is for a potential huge money fight with Deontay Wilder. But, you know, in reality, he's still a good year away from fighting the best of the division.
Hey,
he's still some fights away, I think.
I also wanted to say, my grandma, I wanted to say I hope you feel better, and
yes.
I know you're listening right now, so.
Yes, I am.
Hey! How are you doing?
I'm doing much, much better.
Oh, my God, it's so nice to hear your voice.
Well, I'm still hoarse because of the tube, the NG tube that they have down in your nose and down your stomach, and also I'm still having problems with that. But not,
well, they still dragged you on the radio anyway. Leave it to Butch.
You know, I called it myself.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yep.
No. You've been really, really good taking care of everything for me.
I would expect nothing less of
you. I'll keep him around. Yeah. Be my 51
Thank
years
you.
In August. So maybe I'll keep him around another 51.
Wow. Yeah. Might as well keep him, huh? No reason to trade him, man. He's already paid off.
Ain't no trade in on a 51-year-old.
Yeah.
It's amazing how Frank's friends so quickly jump on him.
Sure.
And thanks, Brady. Thank you for asking how I feel.
Hey, you're welcome. Hey. Butch and I are only work friends.
That's right. We're work friends.
Wow.
I don't know this guy when I clock out.
Well, all right.
Let me get up on the floor.
You know, don't you? And my grandson has been fabulous. And my daughter, all my kids. I mean, they've just absolutely been wonderful. Always gave me flowers, balloons. I mean, the people at the hospital were saying, "You have such a caring family." And I said, "I sure do. Sure do."
Absolutely.
Well, that's a good form of your show. I just want to listen in.
Okay.
And my throat is really giving out now.
Hey, Ty, what do you think of
prayers, guys?
Thank you. Take it easy.
Ty, what do you think of David Price coming back the 29th of this month?
Well, you know, in David Price's mind, he's lost two fighters, Tony Thompson and Ern Tepper. And in the second Tony Thompson fight, Tony Thompson was tested for a banned substance. And Tepper was also tested for a banned substance. So in Price's mind, he feels like, I've only been beaten by guys who are steroids. So, you know, with a boxer, specifically a fighter, whenever they're beaten, for them to have rationale to continue and to feel like, you know what, because they have to have that aura of invincibility in their mind to a certain extent. And for him, this is a way to rationalize his defeat. So what really suffered from him when Tony beat him the first time was his confidence. Once he came back, he was not the same guy. You know what I mean? Tony beat him the first time. It was like, maybe that was a fluke. Then you know, I did the wrong thing. He knocked Tony down the second time. Tony got up and beat him again. His confidence was shot. So if this restores his confidence, he still has some skills that can allow him to be competitive to a certain extent. I think physically he's a little frail. But remember at the time, that's what we thought about Vladimir Klitschko as well. So I'm not saying he could be the next Klitschko, but I'm saying in this era of heavyweight, he's somebody, you know, who would be interesting to watch if he could develop some confidence and, you know, learn to protect himself a little bit better.
I think his downfall, to be honest, I think he can be successful against certain competition. But his downfall is fighting in this era where they have a plethora of big heavyweights that can reach him and touch on him. And you hit it right on the head when you said confidence with David Price. What happens when he fights a guy his size who's touching on him and the going's getting rough for him? Where can you go from there? I mean, I understand, you know, he has the rationale, but still, I mean, it happened. So, I mean,
I'm not real familiar with how he. I'm not really familiar with his career. I'm trying to think of back of who the hell he fought. What weight division is he?
He's a heavyweight. He fought Tony Thompson. Yeah. Tony Thompson twice. Yeah, Tony knocked him out twice.
Yeah.
Tony Thompson knocked him out? Wow.
Yeah, twice.
Wow.
Not too good.
Yeah.
Not too good. He's not a great bunch.
Hey, speaking of which, there's been a lot of rumors that Tony was going to retire. Have you heard anything, Ty?
I have not. I have not heard anything.
No, I have not. I mean, Tony, he still can compete. Decision to retire is his to make, but I mean, granted, from what I saw against Ortiz, I just think Ortiz is that guy to a certain extent. Tony, he still can compete with most of the top heavyweights,
right,
or the up and coming top heavyweights, I should say.
Mm-hmm. You know, and I think it all comes down to Tony and how much he wants to continue, because I think he still can, you know, through boxing, he still can obviously earn a living, because I think he's still competitive with, like Vito said, a lot of top heavyweights. It's just a matter of what he wants to do and if he's ready to transition.
Yeah.
What do you think
now? He's in that trial horse category. He's a trial horse.
Exactly.
You know, it's exactly where he is right now.
Yeah.
And you know what? And even though Luis Ortiz went ahead and stopped him, I thought one of the things that was exposed in that fight, and one of the things I thought that could happen, was that Luis Ortiz would have trouble with the tall heavyweight who can move, because he's not a chaser, and when he was forced to chase, he became a bit of a one dimensional one arm fighter. He's really good if you put him in a position where he could counterpunch you. But all of a sudden, when he had to chase, he was rudimentary in cutting off the ring and applying pressure on Tony. So, Tony still can. I think he's still a bit of a litmus test for heavyweights, like you said, a good trial horse. You know, so he can definitely still earn money.
Yeah. As I'm talking to you guys, you know the fight I want to see. I want to see Ortiz and Joshua. That's going to be a match in the future.
I don't think Joshua wants to see that.
Joshua's right hand against Ortiz's left. We'll see.
I
think Joshua would love to see that match, like Dr. Chris said, in the future. With Joshua being, 27, and Luis Ortiz being 36, he would love for it to be about 5 or 6 years in the future.
Now, I think Ortiz is just too clean, too seasoned. I mean, he had a good amateur career, but he didn't have 400-something fights, 300-something
fights. No, Joshua had an amateur career similar to a Deontay Wilder amateur career. You know, it was abbreviated amateur career, and he just accomplished a lot in a short time.
I mean, compared to Ortiz, he's still green as far as just throwing fists. That wouldn't be a good matchup, I think.
Yeah. Hey, what do you think about the Pulev and Chisora fight tonight?
Oh man, I'm looking to I'm looking forward to seeing that on YouTube. There's been a lot of ruckus. In fact, you know, I meant to show you some stuff. There's been a lot of ruckus with those two, as there usually is with Chisora. Obviously, at the first stare down when the fight was announced, Chisora grabbed him. Then when they were going head to head at the weigh-in, everything seemed pretty cool. And somebody from Pulev's camp threw a plastic bottle or something to hit Chisora in the face. Chisora said, I checked to see if I was bleeding, which he wasn't. It was a plastic bottle. But nonetheless, Chisora jumped off the stage and, threw a few bouncers aside and gave chase to the guy until finally, I guess the guy went to a locked room where they finally calmed Chisora down as he chased the guy through the hallway. So. Chisora is that guy, so I'm very interested to see. I don't Chisora doesn't have the punch resistance that he once had, and he was never great with his activity. You got to like Pulev in a fight. At this point, he seems like the fresher fighter. But Chisora's always he always makes a fun fight. He really does because he pushes the action. So.
Yeah, Chisora's a tough, rugged guy. He's a tough, rugged guy. I just think that this is not a good matchup at this point in time for him. Pulev can fight from the outside. I just don't think this is just a terrible matchup at this point in time for Chisora.
Okay. How about last week? Boxing went back to Washington D.C. to the Armory.
And oh, yeah,
4,200 people. We had it was.
Those were the two decisions that Zito was talking about.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Unfortunately, the judges didn't come back to the D.C. Armory. Those decisions to me were horrible, absolutely horrible.
You want to talk about it?
I mean, well, actually, I'm going to say this much. One decision was absolutely horrible. The other decision I could kind of see, but it's a fight. I think we put your heart and soul into it, and if you earned it, then you should win. We can start with the first fight, James DeGale against, I'm forget the guy's first
Rogelio,
name.
Rogelio Medina.
Rogelio Medina. That fight to me wasn't even close. I think they gave the decision to DeGale, a guy that had less activity to me, less effective, he wasn't aggressive for a large portion of the fight. I don't really know how to describe what he was doing. I guess he was just trying to linger around and pot shots, and maybe sometimes in combination from different angles. Don't get me wrong, the girl is a very good fighter, but he's just not active, and he doesn't do much with him being not active. It's just a lot of moving around, I guess, some sort of defensive moving around.
He's a really talented fighter, but he has a tendency at a point of fight, right, Zito, to kind of coast. And Medina was a guy.
Wiggling.
Yeah, Medina's a guy who's not going to allow you to coast in the fight.
No. And basically, the fight kind of more or less consisted of Medina pushing the pace, landing heavy body shots, pushing DeGale to the ropes, working them over a bit, and DeGale coming off with some very good shots from different angles, but then going back to doing the lingering and wiggling and going on the ropes and getting worked over. And the fight kind of went like that. And they gave the decision to DeGale. Well, briefly, my problem with that is when a guy is working hard with effective aggression, they're generally awarded the fight. I mean, unless there's some knockdown or something other than happen. This guy's going forward. He's landing the shots. He's landing heavier shots against a guy who's not really active, getting hit quite a bit, maybe coming up with some flashy shots, but they're not really as effective. That's a problem, I feel, when that guy doesn't get the decision, because usually if he's on the A side of the card and he has ineffective aggression in that area, he always gets the decision. So I definitely have a problem with that judging. And just the Butte-Badu-Jack fight, I like Badu-Jack. I like where he's going with his skill. I like where he's going. I just think in this fight he needed a little more cardio. I think he won the fight. I think he won it cleanly. But to a certain extent, I could see them giving the case for the draw, just because in certain areas and aspects, Butte outworked them later on in the fight, maybe to steal some rounds. So I still think Jack won. I think he deserved the victory, but
Brady, did you see that? Fight?
Jack, and I never thought I'd say this, but Badu Jack is a guy who I think is like maybe the most improved fighter over the last few years. There's nothing special about his speed or his power, but what this guy has done is really tightened his technique. I mean, Zito made a point to say it's almost like he's shrunken down. Everything's tight. His punches are more crisp, and because of his tighter technique and better fundamentals, he throws sharper punches. He puts himself in less danger. He's really improved himself as a boxer. He's really learned the craft, and is starting to, really show up. And it seems like literally over his last 3 to 4 fights, every time out, he becomes a better fighter.
Against good competition. I mean, against very good competition. These guys are the top of 160 in that he's facing and beating. So, I mean, and to me, to be honest, he's looking like the class of the 168-pound division at the very moment.
Greg, do you see any of that fight?
Whatever happened to the guy that fought, I'm sorry. Okay, go ahead. Whatever happened to the guy that fought Gennady Golovkin, he knocked the guy out. The guy with the odd haircut.
He fights tonight.
Lemieux.
Yeah. Lemieux fights Glenn Tapia. Glenn Tapia was knocked out in New Jersey, a couple years back by James Kirkland. But he fights tonight, actually, on the Canelo Khan undercard.
Yeah.
Oh, he does?
Yeah.
Yes, he does.
Okay.
What?
How much is it on pay-per-view for that Canelo card? $50?
$59.99.
I'll probably get it then. All right. Let's see if I can get a couple guys to come over and enjoy it. I don't want to just, I'll call my buddy and see if he'll come over. I'd like to see that guy fight.
Matt
Shamey.
The guy Lemieux's fighting, Glenn Tapia, he's a solid fighter. I don't know if he's a true middleweight. I just remember him fighting Kirkland at 154 last time I remember, if I'm correct.
Kirkland almost decapitated that kid, boy. Jeez.
Yeah, but you know what? He hung in there for a while against Kirkland, against that pressure. And he had some good shots. He had some good counter punches. He did pretty good.
You know what? He's an aggressive fighter, too. And part of the reason why that matchup was made is because he is an aggressive fighter. You know what I mean? He's an aggressive fighter who Lemieux should be able to beat, being a more natural middleweight. And I think, for Golden Boy, it's a win-win, and it's a good fight for the fans. It really is.
Yeah.
I'd be anxious to see that.
Yeah. That's a pretty heavy card tonight, Chris, with those guys. There's also on AWE, there's another fight on there. I want to pull that out. I just had it out here for you. We have Pulev and Chisora is on AWE tonight.
Okay.
So that would be a good fight for you. Also, Corella and Barroso.
Barroso, yeah, that's a fight Barroso. I was interested in trying to. I'm looking forward to seeing that fight on YouTube as well.
Yeah. That's good.
There's going to be a lot on tonight. That's good.
Yeah, there is. There's this afternoon they had Estrella was on. You wouldn't want to know any of the others. They were all welterweights.
Hey, people should make a website where you can watch fights.
There you go.
Yeah.
That's what they got YouTube for, right?
What usually happens is it's a little tough for me, but I gotta stay off the boxing rags because I'm always reading the news and stuff. So I got to stay off of it. And then what I'll do is I'll catch it when it's put up on YouTube, later in the evening or the next day. So.
Yeah. Well, guys, we're up against our clock here. And Chris, I want to thank you for being on again as usual. Brady, you did a great job.
Hey, wasn't Danny supposed to come on?
I keep calling Danny and Danny. Danny must have his phone in silent again because I've called him 17 times since 6:30.
Oh, my God. You're like a jilted ex-lover.
Yeah, but we'll try and get him again next week. But we want to talk to him about his new fight. And and Z, it's great to have that diagnostician with us. Between you and Chris, we get a chance to listen to it, and our listeners get a chance to actually almost be right there reliving the whole fight. So I appreciate everything you do. So Z, you want to lead us out?
I sure do. I first want to thank every member of the Carroll family, every member of my Fighting Words family. I first want to say happy Mother's Day to all the mothers, grandmothers, sisters, all the females out there who will be mothers. These shows are definitely in memory of Bob, and if anyone wants to hear any Fighting Words, please do call.
Ty?
Sounds good.
Happy Mother's Day, Mom.
Happy Mother's Day to my wife, Laura. And happy Mother's Day to Sharon Carroll as well as Casey Carroll. And to all the mothers out there. It's been a pleasure being on with the whole crew. Dr. Chris, Brady, Butch. Look forward to seeing everyone next week. Bob is our co-pilot.
Great.
All right,
guys. Okay, take care, Chris.
Next week.
Have a good week.
All right.
Bye.
All right, bye.
All right. Brady, you have anything to say?
Nope. Just happy Mother's Day.
Okay.
All right.
We want to send everybody has said it here, and we want to reinforce that the people here at Fighting Words, all 26 of us, wish each and every one of you ladies out there a very happy Mother's Day. To those who have been out there and have lost a child or we wish you're in our prayers. You are in our prayers. Ladies and gentlemen, these programs are brought to you each and every night of the week in grateful appreciation of the men and women of the United States Armed Forces and the men and women of Police and Fire Services. When you're out there and you see somebody in uniform, if you just let them know you know that they're there, a simple wink, a handshake, or the best thing you can ever say to a man or woman in uniform is be safe out there. These programs are also dedicated to those who've lost their lives in the line of duty. Deputy Robert Anthony Carroll, Patrolman David Curtis, Patrolman Jeffrey Colcap, Sergeant Thomas Batinger, Patrolman Jeffrey Yazowitz, Patrolman David Crawford, Detective Randy Bell, Detective Ricky Childers, San Diego Officer Mike Hendler, Lieutenant Mike Servant, Newcastle County Police, Patrolman Onofo Crispin, Lakeland PD, Deputy Barbara Pell, Broward County Sheriff's Office, Chief Al Hogel, Longwood Key Police Department, Chief Jimmy Ford, Wilmington Fire Department, Patrolman Highway Patrolman Alonzo Moses, Philadelphia Highway Patrol, Highway Patrolman Brian Lazaro, Philadelphia Highway Patrol, Highway Patrolman Brian Murphy, Plymouth Township PA Highway Patrol, Lieutenant Bob Neary, Philadelphia Fire Department, Deputy Chief Mike Godwin, Philadelphia Fire Department, MIT Officer Sean Collier, Sergeant Mike Wilson, Charlotte County Sheriff's Office, Deputy Jonathan Scott Pine, Orange County Sheriff's Office, Patrolman Robert Germain, Windermere, Florida Police Department, Trooper Chelsea Richards, Florida Highway Patrol, Lieutenant Joyce Craig Lewis, Philadelphia Fire Department, Patrolman Charlie Condit, Tarpon Springs Police Department, Patrolman Robert Wilson, Philadelphia Police Department, Louisiana Trooper Steve Vincent, Harris County Deputy Darrell Goforth, Prince William County Deputy Ashley Gidden, Eustis, Texas Patrol Officer David Heffer, and Hillsborough County Deputy Sheriff Charlie Kotloff. My brothers and sisters, although you may be 10-7 at this point in time, at some time we'll be 10-10 at the table of the Lord. Until that time, may the roads rise up to meet you. May the winds be always at your back. May the rains fall softly on your face, on your fields, and the sun shine lightly on your face until we meet again. May the good Lord keep you and your families always in the hallow of his hands. Good night. God bless.
Shema Hezahir Ma Son Hashem Nevorat Fet Hakuig Again Ma Yer Ma
Shema Lech Ma Yer Ma Shema Hezahir Ma Son Hashem Nevorat Fet Hakuig Again Ma Yer Ma.
fiery blade engaged to lead. He'd break the bravest in the
advised, 1999 has responded to his last emergency. May God rest his soul.